You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Howdy, everyone, and welcome back to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. I'm your co-host, Corey Groover, and I am privileged to be sitting here with none other than your favorite podcast host in the coon hunting realm, the man who hunted with old Roy himself, Mr. Steve Fielder. How you doing today, Steve?
Hey, Corey. As my friend down there, Daniel Felkard, say, yo, what up?
Oh, man.
I'm doing great, Corey. Doing great. A little tired. Gotta admit it. I am tired. Just got back from about a 2,500-mile round trip, all told, with Miss Ella. We drove up to her daughter's in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Really neat little town if you've never been there. Have you been there, Corey?
No, I can't say I have. I haven't spent too much time out on the East Coast there, so.
Okay, it's kind of on like the northwest side of New Jersey.
Okay.
Got some mountain ridges, beautiful farm country, big cornfields. Man, I bet you they have coon out the wazoo.
Coming out the yin-yang.
They got a river up there, and I'm going to try this, and anybody from New Jersey is going to laugh at me. It's called the Musknetkong River. Musknetkong River. And they simply call it the Muskie, and you can understand why.
Well, sure.
For 2 years, I've wanted to fish that river for trout. They stock it with trout, and it's a nice stream. It looks like, you know, it for an old guy like me, it'd be just right. But both times I've been up there, it's been up and out of its banks.
Oh.
It's rain and all that stuff. So it's the Muskie still owns me. I haven't been able to get a fly or a nymph or a streamer or even a piece of garden hackle. Do you know what that is?
Garden hackle.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know what hackle is as far as talking about fly tying and stuff like that, but garden hackle, what is that?
Yeah. Would be commonly called a red worm.
Oh.
Fishing worms, as we called them back in West Virginia.
There you go. You know, I love to fish, but that's one thing I seldom do. I remember a couple of years ago, my neighbor owns a big place over here, and he's got a big pond he keeps stocked with bass and crappie and all kinds of different fish. And he invited me over to go fishing, and it just happened to be on my birthday weekend. So I went over there to catch fish with him, you know, and he said, my birthday's right around July 4th weekend. And he said, we got to get these fish warmed up a little bit. You know, we're going to have the family over to catch some fish, you know. So if you want to take a couple home with you or whatever, that's fine, you know. And boy, he didn't know what kind of fisherman I was, because I went in there and I was smoking them. after a while he was like, I think that's enough, Corey. I think you ought to go home.
Yeah, go home. Go away, kid. You bother
me. Yeah, exactly.
Reminds me of a story. Surprise.
Boy, let's hear it.
Lived in Michigan for all those years and did very little fishing while I was up there because I was too much. I was wrapped up in coon hunting.
Right.
I was either pleasure hunting or I was working, you know, and traveling and all that stuff. And some of the best fishing, I did go up and fish a few trout streams up around the Baldwin area and up that way. Todd Callum told me about a few streams that he fished up that way and all. But as you know, ice fishing is pretty popular around Kalamazoo.
Oh, you ain't kidding about that.
Yeah, anywhere in the north there, you know. And there's goes the story of this guy that had all the equipment to be a first-class ice fisher. You know, he had the gas-powered auger to drill the hole. He had tip-ups sitting around all over everywhere where the with the bait on them. So when you get a strike, it flips up, the flag comes up, and, you know, you got a fish on. All of this stuff. He had the latest, greatest, had all the down clothing he could buy at Cabela's and all the stuff. And, man, he is just getting skunked. And this little boy comes along over there, and he takes an axe, and he chops a hole in the ice. And, man, this guy's glancing over there, and the kids just pull him one fish after the other. One of those nice yellow perch. Oh, man, those things are so good, especially out of that ice water.
Oh, yeah.
Every once in a while, he pulls a walleye out of there. You know, I mean, this kid's got fish laying all over the ice. So the guy walks over, and he says, "Hey, buddy, man, I got to ask you, you know, how are you catching all of these fish?" And the little boy looks at the guy and he goes, and the guy says, "What?" And he goes, the guy says, "Son, I cannot understand a word you're saying. What did you say?" The kid puts his hand up to his mouth, goes, "You gotta keep the worms warm."
Oh, that's gross. That's just gross, man. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. I got a million of them
for you. Yeah.
That was your fishing tip for today. Steve's tips for more tips. Follow.
Gone to the Dogs podcast.
Gone to the Dogs fishing tips.
Oh, there you go.
No, I've always loved fishing. My dad and I did a lot of trout fishing when I was a kid, and our favorite thing was to take the Coleman stove to the stream with us, and when the day was over, we always cooked our catch right there on the tailgate and just had a great time.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Fishing has been one of my things. But anyway, while we are in New Jersey, and I may have mentioned this on the last podcast, did I mention the earthquake?
Yeah, you said the ground was shaking, but I didn't know if that meant an earthquake or anything else.
A 4.8 on the Richter scale.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
About 20 miles from where we were was the epicenter, Lebanon, New Jersey. And while I was there, we had a total eclipse of the sun. And I did mention that on the last podcast, I think. So all in all, you know, had kind of an interesting trip. But Ella and I drove. In fact, I just got home last night, about 7:30, I think it was. And had overnighted in Emporia, Virginia, just north of the North Carolina line. Not very far from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, and then drove that distance yesterday. So I kind of have decided that those long drives are going to be part of my resume for historic purposes.
Oh, I don't blame you one bit on that. I mean, after going through a you know, after driving that far, the creeks were rising, the ground was shaking, the sky went dark, and then you had to do that drive all over again. That sounds like hell.
Sounds like a good subject matter for a country song.
Yeah, it sure does.
Didn't have mom. Well, mama was with me, but didn't have a truck. Actually, we were driving her Bronco, and we, I don't know. Maybe there's a country song out there and all that. Earthquakes, whole lot of shaking going on.
Yeah, I think you're onto something.
Oh man!
So did you catch the Tournament of Champions coverage?
I did. I made a point to listen. I was traveling. Let's see. That was Saturday night, wasn't
it? Yes, sir.
And we were tired and was definitely not going to stay up late, knowing that I had a long drive the day following. So, but I did. Once I got home, I watched it. Did you?
I sure did. I clear the weekend out. I watch every little bit of it that I can. I love watching it. But, man, there was some good competition there this year. I was really impressed by some of what we were seeing in the live feeds and stuff like that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yep. Well, you know, I kind of had my favorite little dog that I've hunted with a few times, and like the Lone Pine lady female, Randy Smith and John Strickland, and they've taken Doug Galbraith and Ashley Oxendine in, I guess, on that partnership, and I was hoping Lady was going to be the TOC winner, but she did make the top 24, I think, but didn't have any luck going forward, and I did not get to see what happened there. But doggone three male walker dogs, pretty well-bred dogs as far as I could see, and they had a – you talk about the old saying, it ain't over till the fat lady sings, or – it ain't over till it's over. That thing came down to the wire for sure.
Yeah, you ain't kidding about that. Well, Lady made it pretty deep into the finals there, didn't she?
Yeah. She made the top. Well, she was in the 96, of course.
Yeah,
and then she won a cast, her first cast, I believe, on Thursday night, maybe, and that put her in the top 24.
Right.
But I think in the early round, then on Friday night, she must have got eliminated in that round, and I'm not sure which dog beat her, whether it was one that went all the way or not. Do you have the stats there?
I might be able to check that out. I'll tell you what dog I was really pulling for was the Bus Road Creek Hawk Dog. He ended up making it into the top six, I believe. He made it into those heads up casts that they put on. I want to say the dogs from deep in the Midwest there, like maybe Nebraska
now,
or something like that.
Yeah, the Josie Wales dog, I believe, is named Bus Row Creek.
Oh, really?
Josie Wales, or I think. Now, I could be wrong. We had a pup, Keston Jesse, and I had a pup out of Josie Wales and a Lone Pine. I say that wrong every time. It was out of a Steve Mackey female named Casey,
right,
over in Missouri. But I was thinking that Josie Wales maybe had that Bus Row Creek as part of his name, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it looks like Lady made it to round two. She drew a four-dog cast, and she actually drew out with Bus Row Creek Hawk. Hawk's the one that knocked her out. He had a cast one with 450-plus, and she had 350-plus.
Okay.
So then he got knocked out the very next round, so in the heads-up stuff.
Okay, so when so anyway, the way that worked, and I think we went over it last time, those 20 – four dogs, 106 casts, that gave six winners. Then they went in to a head-to-head round late.
Yes, sir.
And then those three dogs emerged. Well, it was interesting. We've heard a lot in the last year or two, probably the last year, about Virgil Davis's Frogger dog, an AKC world champion.
Yes, sir.
Well, I see that one of the dogs in the final three, the Freakin' Nature dog, was out of Frogger.
Yeah, isn't that something?
So, yeah. So, hey, they kind of came to the top real quick. I was just kind of scrolling through some threads on Facebook, and it was kind of weird. When we got home last night, my internet was down, and finally came to realize this morning that my modem was bad, so got that all replaced. But I was trying to do a little bit of research, but I did see a thread on Facebook talking about Frogger dogs, and they say, well, in the next year or two is when you're probably going to see a lot of Frogger dogs in the results, because, you know, there has been just a ton of females, and good females too, from what I can tell, bred to Frogger, you know, in these past few months.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive to have, you know, a dog that with relatively young pups on the ground, may have a dog make it to the finals of an event like this and go as far as he did. So that's pretty great.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I understand this Freakin' Nature dog is owned by Jack Craig and Walter Hickman, I guess. No, Josh Craig.
Yeah, Josh Craig.
Josh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Tennessee. And Josh, I was looking at his interview on the Tournament of Champions coverage there, and he said he had won Autumn Oaks back in 2002. So that's a pretty notable win on your resume.
I would say so.
But and then surprise, surprise, one of the big or little money dogs was on there. The dog owned by actually owned by Travis Black. Now, I don't know Travis. Do you?
No, not particularly.
Okay. Well, this dog had been owned by Ike Rainey from down here in Florida and Malcolm Raines. Ike and Malcolm are partners. Know both of those fellas. Have seen them at the events down here for the last few years. Maxed out Mad Money. Handled by Dustin Weed. They simply call him Out, I guess, with all those words to contend with. Mm-hmm. He was out of the little money dog, the money maxed out dog. And so, you know, that's a long, that little money would have been out of big money.
Mm-hmm.
And big money was out of the big D dog.
Yeah.
That, Russ Beller and Randall Myers owned him last, I think. And, but I remember him back when Don Gostomski owned him. And the dog came up missing in South Carolina at a hunt and was gone for, I think, over a year. I don't know exactly how long they found the dog.
Oh, no kidding.
But yeah,
I didn't know
that
story.
Quite a story.
Wow.
There. Mm-hmm. And he then won the UKC World Hunt, I think, under – did he not win the UKC or was
he won the UKC World Hunt in 2009. So that would have been the year before Mr. Clean won at the first or won the World Hunt. And that was in Rogersville, Tennessee.
Okay. So I don't know. Did was Whitted handling him when he won the World Hunt? Or was – I think he was owned by Russell and Randall Myers at that time.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in tall weeds here. I'm
all the technical talk.
And then rounding out that top three was the Heather Island Wipeout Z dog. Now, Z made big headlines when Ike Rainey bought him. And I don't get into anybody's finances, so I don't know exactly what the price was, but it was phenomenal. I think probably the highest that had ever been paid for a coonhound at that point. And right now, I think he is the all-time money winner in money hunts. Maybe PKC, maybe all registries. I don't know that for sure either.
Yeah.
But he was sired by Wipeout Zeb 3 dog, who was out of Zeb again, who in turn was out of Wipeout Zeb. Everybody, I think, knows about the Wipeout line, Barry Kitty's dogs down through the years there. Now, a guy that I have been on hunts with, a few hunts here in Florida since I've been here, Oliver Wynn handled Z in the TOC finals. So Oliver's from over here at Daytona Beach, just across the island here from where I am.
So Oliver's the one that they were saying worked for NASA.
Yeah, I think he's a pipe fitter.
Okay.
And that I remember that because that was my dad's trade.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, you got three males there, a Frogger dog, a big money dog, and a Zeb 3 dog. So yeah. You got genetics, and you got apparently some really good coonhounds in the mix.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, Wipeout Z, I think he was the favorite going into this hunt, too. I think he was one of the
most he probably was because of his earnings, yeah. You know, of course, Dustin Weed has probably won more money than Z has,
yeah.
But with various dogs, you know.
Sure.
But, okay, well, I did listen to it, and it was an interesting cast, and it was one of those who's kind of like a basketball game, you know, comes down the wire and you got 10 seconds left and it takes a while to play it out. But it looked like Z was going to win it.
Yeah.
You know, he was out front there at first and, you know, a 275 plus at one point there and out was at 50 minus. And then I didn't really follow real closely to see what his woes were, but the freak dog, just kind of got in a deep hole right off the start and things didn't get any better for him. But it looked like it was all Oliver Wynn's win right up until the very end. And, boy, I tell you, I think there on his last tree, on Z's last tree, there was only about 3 minutes or so.
Yeah, just about.
Left in the hunt and there was a hole in the tree. And, of course, I had to chuckle, and you know how handlers are. Well, at one point, they were laughing about that Weed had told him it'd be all right for him to go ahead and tree Z if he wanted to. But he was running the stationary on him, I think. But they didn't find a raccoon. They only found a hole when he circled up.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, I think it was only a minute or two left. Do you remember how much time?
Not much.
At the end when Weed struck and treed out and doggone. As you always hope it'll happen when you tree one right there at the end of the bell. There was a raccoon.
Yeah, that just goes to show you.
A $50,000 raccoon.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That just goes to show you that you're never safe until hunt time runs out. And even then, you might not be safe.
With the dogs that we have today and their ability to tree coons over their head, tree any coon, you know. Mm-hmm. Old timers would probably argue, well, they can tree the hot ones. Well, okay. But it's nighttime. Coons are out there moving around. I had a little walker female named Kelly, and they mentioned at one point Mill Creek Molly in its coverage that I watched. And Mill Creek Molly was her dam, and I hunted with Molly several times, and she was lethal. And the Kelly female I had, I knew in Michigan, if I had about 3 minutes left and I needed a coon, get her loose.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, because odds are she was going to find you one in that in 3 minutes or less. And that's a good feeling. Of course, I don't pretend that she was the caliber of dogs that these are. These dogs have been hunted, hauled hundreds of thousands of miles all over the United States, hunted in all kinds of terrain. So, you know, they're very deserving. And hats off to Dustin Weed and to Travis Black, the owner, and they're $50,000 wealthier this morning or this today than they were.
Oh yeah.
What was your overall view of the tournament champions? I've got a few little remarks I'd like to throw in.
You know, I think that it's, I've never been a money hunt guy, and I don't pretend to be, and to each their own. So I think that what UKC's been able to do with this event is spectacular. I just hope that it doesn't detract from some of the other events that they put on that is more of a working man's event, like Autumn Oaks or the World Hunt or something to that effect, because obviously there's a lot of excitement and a lot of push out there to get your five cast wins to get in for Tournament of Champions. And I just hope that not to put a bad pun out there, but I hope that this event doesn't eclipse something like the World Hunt for UKC moving forward. That's kind of my personal opinion on the event. Otherwise, I mean, watching the coverage and stuff like that is that's pretty great, being able to see the amount of effort that's getting put into this hunt and try to follow along with it. The coverage as it comes. I know they have a lot of technical issues and stuff like that, but you know, being able to stay up and watch the coverage on the TOC is something I very much look forward to every year. So,
well, having been a guy that sat in front of the keyboard and typed out the play-by-plays and kept the scores going, and I tried to modernize it. I know when I was at PKC, we designed an online scorecard where I could just type the scores in and they would show up on a card on the viewer screen, you know. And I tried as many innovations as I could, given the technology that we had to work with. I look forward to the day that we get the technology to the point where we can get good, clear views, uninterrupted, static-free, or whatever the term may be, coverage of the final cast. I know they did everything in their power to produce this thing and make it first class, and I applaud Alan and Trevor and everybody at UKC. But we're not there yet, obviously. There was a lot of pixelated coverage, you know, I almost wish there was somebody there with the cast that was just a constant stream of commentary coming back. This guy struck, this guy treed. The Z dog is 900 to our left. The out dog is 1.2 to our right. We're walking along a creek here. You know, we can hear. For a moment, we couldn't hear the dogs because an aircraft went over. Just whatever. And keep, you know, the listener plugged in. The technology obviously is not there yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're still using cell phones to try, you know, through a YouTube outlet or a Facebook outlet or whatever. But unfortunately, the technology is not there. It will be someday, but applaud them a million times for going out there and trying to give us the very best they can.
Yeah.
And there's no criticism here. It's only wishing that we were at a point where we could cover a wild coon hunt, you know, the way some other sports, but you can't, you know, you watch all these hunting shows and you watch the deer hunting. Well, that's, you know, that's all recorded and you go back and you edit it. And I think that's what Josh Michaelis did with the Joy Super Dog Hunt. Was that what it was called?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they waited and ran the coverage the following day, so they were able to edit some of that stuff. But
well, I'll tell you what.
Other than that, it was exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That it brings back – whenever I watch that kind of stuff, I can't help but empathize with guys like Trevor that have to go along with the cast and try to communicate back to the headquarters of the event, trying to get them as much information as possible. That is not a job that anybody can do because, number one, you have to understand how a cast operates, number one. You need to know what you are able to do and what you aren't able to do in those sort types of situations. And I feel like a lot of, you know, the people that are involved with the media production probably don't understand all of those, eloquent, non-written rules that, you know, you kind of give people their space and, you know, mutual respect kind of thing. But, you know, that could be difficult. I actually reminded me of a funny story. When I first started with UKC and I went to my first UKC World Hunt, Alan proposed that I'd go out on the cast and report back to him what was going on for the Final Four play-by-play. And I made it out there to the woods and everything like that. And I think we were going into probably the last 30 or 45 minutes of hunting time. And my phone died and I, you know, we're in the middle of this cast and guys are making calls and dogs are getting treed. And I literally had to run full bore back to the truck and get one of our field reps' cell phones to continue the play-by-play action that was going on the UKC forums at that time. And I think that was Benny Bowles. I think that was Benny Bowles' cell phone. Benny Bowles was a UKC field rep from Texas, I believe. And I had to run back to the truck, grab his phone, make it all the way back to the cast, which had moved by that point, find them, catch up on everything I had missed. And by the end of that cast, I was dog tired. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, without a doubt you would be. And, you know, having been around as I have through the progression of a lot of this stuff, you know, back in the very earliest days of calling information back in off of a cast, you know, and even to the point of, I remember in one of the early Grand Slam hunts out in Missouri, using walkie-talkies.
Oh, yeah, that would have been a good idea.
To talk back with the master of hounds at the truck. And I remember we had Harold Kirkus, the Purina rep from Oklahoma, was our master of hounds, and Mac McAllister. People remember Mac from Lipper and so many top stud dogs. He was our guide that night. And a dog called Silver Dollar Cracker, who at that time, I believe he was still holding the PKC all-time money-winning lead, ended up winning that cast. But we used walkie-talkies, and I would step back away from the cast where I could get, you know, so the handlers would not be hearing me talking or I wouldn't be interfering with the dogs or with them calling their dogs. Or the judges, you know, receiving their calls to communicate with them and let them know where we were and how much time we had left and all these kind of things. But been on both ends of that. I've been sitting, you know, many times in the clubhouse in front of a keyboard as someone called in, you know, and with those results. So absolutely, I thought the reporting was top notch. The information coming out of the woods back to Alan Gingrich was top notch. The only thing that was lacking was the quality of the video. And there again, you know, that technology thing. So I hope that in time we'll get to that point with these events.
Well, Steve, not to interrupt you, but you've worked, I remember you were fortunate enough to work on the TOC coverage 1 year. What year was that? Yeah.
The first year.
The very first year.
I think this is the fourth one.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Are the people that are behind the camera, are those employees of the United Kennel Club, or is that a separate organization that comes, or a separate business that comes in and does the recording for them?
Well, I don't know exactly what the arrangement is, a contractual arrangement or whatever, but I do know that just prior to the TOC, the first year, they announced that they had hired Sharon Nardi to be their media director at UKC. Not Sharon. Shannon, I believe it is. She's going to kill me. Anyway, and her father was Jerry McInnes, who had a very popular fishing show years ago called The Fishing Hole. And it was kind of, it wasn't like the real high energy Bill Dance, Houston. what's Houston's first name? Jimmy Houston.
Jimmy, yeah.
Yeah, man. He always kissed those bass before he threw them back.
I was more of a Bill Dance guy myself.
Oh, yeah. Big orange tee on it.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I always laughed at him with those Bass Pro Shop commercials. Somebody asked about where to go fishing. He says, I know a guy. You know.
There's a hilarious Garmin fish finder commercial out there that has Bill Dance on it. Him jumping off the boat when the game wardens are coming or something like that. Oh my gosh, I die every time I see that.
Oh yeah, those Bill Dance outtakes or bloopers are hilarious. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, they, you know, that's when they really got into the swing on this media thing. And I don't know, I did see Shannon down at the Winter Classic. She was there participating in the media aspects of that event. So I don't really know. I know that she had an entire crew with her.
Wow.
You know, the production crew back at the headquarters where Jamie and Rick and Steve are sitting, you know, in front of the cameras and the production. But I didn't see quite as many bells and whistles on this production this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's maybe phased back a little bit or just for the sake of time, because I know that first broadcast that episode that we put out on YouTube was like 8 hours long.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was,
you know, it was like forever.
It was a documentary.
And it was a ball. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every minute.
That would make a pretty good episode if we could ever swing that, talk to some of those people that are involved with the production end of UKC's media stuff. I would love to learn more about how they do it and what their goals are and stuff like that. That'd be pretty neat.
Oh, yeah.
You think you could pull some strings, Steve?
Well, we might be able to do that somewhere along the line. And as soon as we do that, we're going to have the old boys back there behind the stove. I want to hear about old Blue.
Yeah.
I want to hear how many hour old track could he track.
Ah, there you go.
You know, so we're trying to you know, placate or please everybody. And I know we can't do that, but we sure do enjoy trying, don't we?
Oh, we sure do.
Yeah. Speaking of which, did we shine that tree?
I think we did. Pretty good
there.
Yeah. Circled up.
But anyway, kudos to UKC, number one, for coming up with the Tournament of Champions. I think it's a great thing, great idea. Get five. I will have to say again, and they're going, here comes the hate mail. You know, we came up with the idea of counting cast wins for championships when I was at AKC. And we came up with the idea of beat the dogs you draw, that's all. you know, instead of having to be a first place overall for the whole hunt, just beat your, win your cast and do that a prescribed number of times and you'll become a night champion. Well, as this worked out, 5 wins makes your dog a night champion. 5 wins qualifies you for the Tournament of Champions. So it was a great deal. And something you mentioned earlier, Corey, that you may not have thought about. You said you hoped that this didn't interfere with the average guy, you know, and that the stakes were getting big and all this. Man, you can get in this Tournament of Champions for, what, $150?
Well, I guess
125. Well, it takes you, you know, you're going to have to travel some to get those five casts.
I guess I got to put the ball back in your court on that one. In a previous episode, we kind of covered the odds and ends expenses of finishing a dog out to Grand Night Champion. And that dog just happened to be your particular Grand Night Champion. Bear Pen Fever, you know, there's costs that are obviously associated with getting those 5 wins that, but you know, as far as the entry fee goes, the entry fee is phenomenal. That $150 entry fee, you can't enter an event for, you know, with that kind of purse for that. I guess my point with that was, I don't want to see the monumental following of the World Hunt get diminished. I don't want to see the light be shined on the Tournament of Champions more than, say, the World Hunt or something of that great magnitude.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we've been in those positions before helping put on those events. And, you know, it's just regular people behind the scenes. And obviously, you know, attention can be given to one event more so than the other. And I just hope that that's just not the case and that these longstanding UKC hunts can compete with the TOC, so to speak, for attention and funds and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I agree with you there for sure. But the thing is, with so many now, and not only within one registry. Well, you've got UKC. Let's count them.
Yeah, let's do
UKC's
it.
UKC's got their Tournament of Champions. Big deal.
Yep.
You know, I guess you would have to now say is their biggest deal of all.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, I hate to see that stolen from the world champion, which, you know, I cut my teeth on that program. I was back first year I was a field rep in 1978. Was the first year of the UKC World Championship. So, yeah, that I hate to see that diminished in any way. And then, of course, the National Grand Night Champion of Autumn Oaks has always been a huge honor and something that people wanted to win because of the prestige involved back in the day. I don't know if there's any money involved with it now at all. But back in the day, there was not. There were some nice trophies and some vendor prizes and things like that. And then you have the other large events, the Winter Classic. And back in my day, we had the American Heritage Hunt in Texas. Then along came the Heartland Classic that was started up in Iowa. And those titles are all important, you know, to the people that win them for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. I guess you'd have to do a poll on Facebook, somewhere on social media to see, you know, rank the events. Of course, PKC has the same problem that UKC, if it is a problem, is with their World Hunt and then their Super Stakes. Then they divided that up into 3 or 4 divisions according to age. Then they have the national championship, which I think is their largest, most important hunt because I think the competition's tougher. And then they have, you know, their big, they have their $100,000 hunts and all these things. So there's a lot competing for the top of the heap as far as recognition. But I've always said that recognition is the name of this game.
Oh, yeah.
And I heard Dustin Weed say, on this coverage of this TOC. And I'll interject right here. I don't know Dustin. I've never really talked to him. I've spoken to him at the events, never made, you know, the extra step to talk to him. I know that he's won a lot of money. I think he is probably the all-time money-winning handler in PKC, I believe. And he said that for this dog, you know, he wanted to win this thing for the recognition for this dog, because he said the dog had had some tough luck in the events he'd been in. You know, he'd maybe just get out of pocket or you know, circle up where he needed his coon or whatever. But the way he talked, he said, this out dog is a dog that deserves this, and I want to win it for him. And I thought that was pretty cool, really.
Yeah. You know.
And it gets back to what we're saying about, you know, it really all boils down to recognition.
Yeah. And you know, that is a very respectable thing for any of us to hear from someone like Dustin, who has had all the recognition in the world as such an accomplished handler. You know, it's really encouraging to see someone in that position, you know, be willing to give the recognition to the dog, to mm-hmm. want the best for that dog. That just goes to show you that, you know, his heart's in the right place and he's doing it for the right reasons. You know, unfortunately, with a lot of these big hunt titles and big money hunts and stuff like that, Sometimes the recognition gets thrust upon the owners and handlers of the dog. And last time I checked, you know, the owners and handlers weren't the ones running and treeing the coons. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for him, not having met him myself, just because of that.
Yeah, and here I keep backtracking, but I think what you may have been trying to say earlier too, when you said that you hoped that this tournament of champions and events of that type don't negatively impact the importance of the other events, it's getting out there at the most fundamental level and competing with your dog can be some of the most fun experiences that you'll ever have. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you listen, you get around these guys and they'll start talking about that hunt, this hunt or that hunt, where this dog did this or that dog did that. I guarantee you, Oliver Wynn and Dustin Weed, and to a lesser extent, Josh Craig will never forget the happenings of last Saturday night.
I would.
And how that hunt was so close, right down to the wire, and how the ball was bouncing all Oliver's way. You know, it looked like he was gonna walk away with this thing, because who would have thunk it? Right off the bat, Dustin draws 125 minus.
Right.
3 points.
Yeah.
You know, and we always say, you know, you don't want to make a mistake. You know, you got to stay right in it to the end. But, man, don't dig a hole that you got to climb out of.
Yeah.
But that's a testament to perseverance. And I don't know the man's mind, but I know he's got a good competition mind. And I know that he was not about to give up. You know, he was hoping against hope that exactly what happened would happen, and that his dog would get treed right at the end with a coon. And if it was 2 minutes before the end of the hunt or 2 seconds before the end of the hunt, it was enough. Mm-hmm. You know, so he had to be a happy man when he walked up to that tree.
Oh, I'm sure.
Apparently, it didn't take him long to score it. I didn't see, but
well, Steve, I got to ask you the important question as it relates to the TOC and the coverage and stuff like that. We didn't see a whole lot of Brindle, so let's talk. Let's talk about that. What the heck's going on here?
Well, we got to go to the woodshed.
Well, you know, on a serious note, obviously the walkers dominated the field here as they do in most events, but you know, ordinarily we see good representation from each of the other breeds and even on down into, you know, the crossbred dogs and stuff like that. But I was pretty surprised to see that that there was no representation from the plot hound breed, and I think that we're obligated to talk about it as plot hound owners, and you being the plot hound aficionado that you are, I think we need to visit that real quick.
Well, you want to generate a lot of hate.
Well, and you notice you notice I said real quick.
Well, the first thought that comes to my mind is about the walker dog. That all started with a dog named Tennessee Lead. You can blame this whole Holstein Spotted Army thing on that dog because he turned the future of the Walker Foxhound around. And if no matter how you want to connect the dots all the way back to those days in Kentucky, when this competition game came along after World War II and these fellas sat down and put together a set of rules, it was always, from that point forward, pretty much a speed contest. It was pretty much award the dog that strikes first, award the dog that trees first, give them the most points. And these dogs are athletes. If you listen to the TOC interviews with the handlers of these dogs and they talk about, you know, these dogs were, for the interview, they're just as calm as a house pet, mm-hmm. You know. Even when you're leading them to the woods, I did notice the Z dog maybe pulling a little more on his leash than I would have wanted him to if I was on the other end of it. But for the most part, they're pretty laid back and all. But when that leash is unsnapped, it's a different animal, you know. But the walker dog, and I have to say this because I believe it's true. It's the foxhound roots. It's the running dog roots. It's that drive and speed that the walker dog has that makes him what he is in competition. I saw it in the bobcat packs of Shorty Gorham in South Texas, where he hunts bobcats with running bred walker dogs. I see it with Mike Kemp, the dogs he produces out of Oregon that bear hunters are going to by the droves. And I've heard that he's, going to be curtailing his breeding activities. These dogs are extremely popular among bear hunters all over the country. They're foxhound crosses. You go back to my old buddy Mike Thorman up in Michigan, who works with the Michigan Hunting Dog Federation. His dogs are coonhound running dog crosses. That walker foxhound that was bred down through those years, infused in these dogs, that immense heart desire to compete, you know, and I don't think that, you know, they don't necessarily have everything that everybody wants, but they do have that. You hear the guys continually talking about that big motor. He moves around good. They go deep. That's a walker dog. That's the majority of the walker dog. And this game, the rules and so forth, fit that pattern just the best. Now, to talk about the plot dog, there just isn't enough of them. And the guys that do have them are not competition-minded enough to get them out there and bump heads every weekend, every night with other dogs. And that typing's coming through. Are you typing?
Oh, sorry.
What are you doing? Working on next week's term paper?
No, my wife's my wife's messaging me. So sorry. I have to respond.
It must
to the
be
boss.
Time. It must be time to cut. No, this thing short. I'm just kidding with you, Corey. but no, that's my stomp on the Walker dog. I think it's the roots go very, very deep. As far as a contest that's based on quickness. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's all the other things. But the dogs have to have brains. They're smart. They know where the coons live. They live up in the trees. Or they spend most of their time up in the trees. And they get up on them quick. And that's what makes them the big winners. But the plot dogs, you know, every once in a while one comes along. And if just these guys would jump on the bandwagon, so to speak, or take a page out of the Walker Man's handbook and go at it the way most Walker handlers and hunters do, I think you'd see more of these brindle dogs come to the front, or red dogs, or blue dogs, or black and tans. I thought my buddy Mississippi Randy Smith had two dogs that had his hands all over, fingerprints all over in the top 24, and that was the Gaucho dog that Chad McCoyne hunted. And I think he got into, maybe he won an early cast at the finals. And then the, I can't think of the little female that Randy himself hunted, but he had a black and tan female in there too. And lo and behold, as happened so often, they both drew out in the same cast. Two black dogs in the top 24, and they had to hunt against each other. And Gaucho did win that cast, but then I think he must have got beat in the following round. But
my gosh! So, what's the farthest that a plot hound has advanced in the TOC so far?
I don't think any of them have made the finals.
Okay.
I don't think any of them have come to Greencastle.
Wow.
If they have, it would surprise me. I know they did not the year that I was there. I would remember those dogs. Now, there have been some plot dogs that have really done well in major competition. Bill Harrell's Logan dog. You know, Bill, I think, really enjoyed going to Walker days and hunting against the Walker dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the other breed days, you know. And he did really well with that dog when he was in his prime. And so there are some, you know, and, of course, Heat, Sizzling Heat, we know, that won the World Hunt. He was that type of dog. My friend Jim Garrison out in Missouri calls himself the plot promoter and has for years. You know, he would put his dog in competition.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more. I'm going to get to go to West Virginia here in a couple of weeks from I guess about a week and a half, and participate in an appreciation for a longtime plot guy named John Sturgill. And I knew John back in West Virginia, and I hunted with him. And John was the guy that had the audacity to take a plot dog down to Southeastern Walker Days and win it in Salisbury, North Carolina. So there have been those, you know, but there's just not enough of them.
Right, exactly. Well, and I don't want this to sound critical, because I don't really have any place to be critical of anybody that competition hunts or anybody that's promoting a certain breed within
me either.
Yeah.
Me either.
But, you know, from my perspective, the plot hound that we see today, the ones that are actually out there competing in these hunts, I don't think personally that there are very many of them where they aren't consistent enough to win these five cast wins in a year to get to the Tournament of Champions. If I had to blame one side of the lead or the other, I'd probably blame it on the human aspect more than anything. Maybe us
absolutely.
Maybe it's us as handlers that aren't consistent enough to get these dogs into the spotlight where they need to be.
That's for sure. That's for sure. It's kind of like they used to say about the NFL. On any given Sunday, any team can beat another team, any other team. And it's the same thing with these dogs. We know there's luck involved. There has to be luck involved. How does Z have a den and Out have a coon to win $50,000? I mean, you know, there's a lot of circumstances involved. But guys, if you want to win with the plot dog, you got to get out there and go to town.
That's exactly right.
You know, you really do. I tell you, getting away from the plot just a little bit, but back to this TOC. What about, you know, here's a dog out of Frogger, who is probably about the most popular Walker stud dog in the country right now. A dog out of Big Money, or Little Money, excuse me. And a dog out of Wipeout Zeb 3. Who was out of Zeb again and wipe out Zeb as you go back. You know, these are major bloodlines. People choose the different ones, you know, but you got Schooner River in here. It's good to me to see the efforts of these breeders, you know, paying off in this way. And it's not all, everything is not out of Merchant's Banjo, too, or Johnson's Banjo, or House's Chief, you know.
Right.
It's not all out of Warren Hassler's Diamond Gem dog for the Blue Ticks and all, you know. So, to me, it's just fun to see these major bloodlines that have been promoted. And it's not due to the fact that they've got big ads in the magazines anymore. It's due to what they're out there producing.
Yeah.
And people are watching the results. And, you know, the little dog we have, Mark Miller and I have, we didn't really, you know, I had to do with breeding his mother. But, you know, my good friend Bill Scheniger, you know, he went out and did the work with Lazarus. Won plot days, won his cast all 3 nights, got the Isaiah Kidd Award, piqued my interest in the dog to where I thought, man, there's a nice dog. I'd like to have a piece of that. So that's what, you know, these plot guys and all you guys, blue guys, red ticks, whatever, you got to stop looking out the back window. You got to start looking around, seeing what's out there. What can improve what you've got if you want to win? You know, and if you want to be like I am, Facebook commando, and you know, talk about it on Facebook. But
well, I'll tell you what, it's nice to have this kind of conversation though, because you know, I can kind of put my shoes into put my feet into the boots of some of these other hunters now, because like I've got a young little plot female that she was just in her first cast here 2 weeks ago at a PKC hunt. Well, now I got something to shoot for, cause we're sitting here talking about it and nobody's made it to the TOC with a plot hound yet. I guess I'm going to try to be the
there
first one. Everybody should have that kind of mentality, right?
Yeah. Well, you have to have goals.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I don't want to talk about this dog of ours, but from the very start, we had goals. We had steps, you know, baby steps. We want to do this, and we want to do that, and we want to do that. And we still have some goals.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's
immediate goals. We want to be qualified for the next World Hunt. We want to be qualified for the next TOC.
We have plenty of plot hounds out there that are Grand Night champions, and plenty of plot hounds that – them and their owners alike are very capable of achieving anything that's
awesome. Yeah, I'm going to call some of them out. I saw Terry Gasway just made a Grand Night here last week.
Oh, that's fantastic. So
must be a really nice dog.
Yeah.
I got Jacob Coons over there. He's hunting the dog. What's the boy's name? Sewell or so? Who's the fella he hunts that? He's got a good young Grand Night champion plot dog. You know, and I'm sure Jerry Price in North Carolina just finished a night champion female, and all they're around, they're everywhere. Got to take them to town.
Yeah.
You know, got to get out there and promote. And if your breed is one that I think my friend Charles Pudell, retired military Army colonel down in Georgia, you know, he's putting those red bones out there. Jack Bingham out in Iowa hunting those red bones and doing great with them. You know, I always thought Shane Maxey did a great job with his red dogs out of Wisconsin.
Don't get me started on red dogs, Steve.
Hey, I guess we ought to do a podcast on red bones here coming up.
Oh, boy, we're going to be here all day.
Of course, we can call in our buddy Fred Moran. I haven't checked in with Fred in a little while. I need to. I got one little thing I wanted to talk about. We're getting on to an hour and 3 minutes, and we're not even going to get anywhere close to what I'd intended for us to do. And I thought we were going to introduce Scott McLaughlin from down in Virginia, a bear hunter down there, a great guy that does a lot of good for the youth. But he had a phenomenal bear dog that I wanted to talk about. But I thought it'd be kind of neat just to look at a little bit about this podcast. When would you say, are the prime times of day that people listen to podcasts?
You know, if I knew that you were going to quiz me as much as what you have on this podcast thus far, I don't know that I would have signed up for it, but I'm going to throw an answer out there. Let's see. I'm going to say what I need to give you a range between the range of an okay. hour.
Let's do it this. Yeah.
Okay.
Do it that way and figure what, and there are two time frames that are very, very close by this graph that I'm looking at right now. But, what two times of the day would you say most people listen to podcasts?
I'm going to say my morning choice is going to be 11 to 12, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. My afternoon option is going to be from 2 to 3 o'clock. How close was I?
Okay, you're a lot closer on your afternoon than you are your morning.
Oh, dang it. Okay.
Okay. Consider starting with the 12 a.m. Starting point, which is 12 in the morning, right? Going for the key time by quite a good margin. For morning listening is between 5 and 6 a.m.
You're kidding me.
5 and 6 a.m. I would think sense. That the guys are driving to work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of
sense. Or getting to work and just getting their day started or whatever. You said
2 to 3.
In the afternoon?
Yes, sir.
And that is actually about a third as many as are listening at 5 to 6
Holy smokes.
In the morning. The afternoon hot spot is 3 to 4 p.m.
You're right. I was close.
Yeah.
Oh, shucks.
And it's kind of interesting to me that a pretty strong showing was the 12 a.m. to 1 a.m. slot. And of course, I guess this is based on Eastern time, and I think so. But I was thinking that that's probably guys coming in from hunting.
Yeah, probably right. I know some of these guys, especially the guys down south, you know, we're talking about states like, I don't know, maybe Missouri and North Carolina and the Carolinas and stuff like that. Some of these guys got to drive over an hour to go hunt in a lot of mm-hmm. places where finding ground to hunt is difficult, you know, as far as finding public ground or private ground that you're allowed to hunt.
Mm-hmm. Well, 7 to 8 p.m. is a fairly strong. It's a little better than half of what the best listening time. By the way, the best listening time was the 3 to 4 p.m. in the afternoon.
Wow. Okay.
On this last week. All right. Let's go to another choice here. This one I know you're going to get. What is the top country where the podcast is listened to?
Well, I know it's not Ethiopia. I'm going to say the United States.
Give the man a cigar. Absolutely. 93.48% of the listeners come from the good old USA. And the rest are kind of mere pittance. What would you say is number two? Country-wise.
It's a toss-up for me. It's either going to be Canada or it's going to be the UK. I'm going to say Canada.
You are correct. Right. There is almost 4% of our listeners come from Canada.
Hey, that's great.
And 0.13% come from the UK.
Wow.
So all these other countries, there's less than 1%. Australia, Germany, Norway, Sweden, UK, Ireland, New Zealand,
so
and Spain.
Specifically talking about our UK listeners, and if you are a UK listener, please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think?
Absolutely.
What do you think the story is there? Because obviously they don't have raccoons. Are we talking to transplanted coon hunters, or what's the deal with that?
Well, I think a lot of the listeners from other countries could possibly be military.
Yeah, good point.
You know, and also there's quite a hunting heritage in the United Kingdom
for sure.
You know, the fox hunters, of course, they had the ban. And there still are some that do that discriminately.
Well, I'll tell you,
in
my
UK.
Talking about the hunting heritage in the UK, one of my guilty pleasures is getting on YouTube and watching some of the ratting videos they have on there where they flip over old grain bins and
everything. Oh, yeah,
like
that's
that.
A trip.
Oh,
isn't it?
My gosh. I'd love to have a good ratter like that.
Oh, yeah. I saw the one where they go down the row. They're digging up these things, and these terriers are snatching them out of the air.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's like,
and a lot of times they'll even have, like, whippets and greyhounds and, you know, different sight hound breeds there for those, I don't know if in case they.
Well, they have what they call lurchers.
Lurchers.
And then, yeah, and then they have the, what's the ones that, the sight hounds, you know, mm-hmm. like the greyhounds, Salukis, etc. But yeah, we've got had nine downloads in good old Dublin, Ireland.
Oh boy!
Now you know a lot of the foxhounds came from Ireland.
Yep.
In fact, the Walker family imported some dogs from Ireland when they were trying to come up with a dog to catch a red fox. Yeah. Before they got Tennessee Lee.
Oh, boy.
Okay, here's the last one. First of all, what app do you listen to your podcasts on?
Almost exclusively. If I can't get a podcast on, like, YouTube or something like that, I'm going to listen to it through Apple Podcasts.
Okay, Apple Podcasts. All right. Who would you say is the leading platform or application that our podcasts are listened to on?
I'm an Apple guy, but I'm going to say Spotify.
Well, you should have stayed with Apple. 73% Apple podcasts. 11.44% Spotify.
That's ironic because that's the grade that I have in this class right now, isn't that? 73%.
Okay, that's a pretty good grade. That's a pretty good grade.
Yeah, well. I've always been middle of the road, so.
So people actually listen to the podcast through Facebook. I guess I didn't realize that. But anyway, yeah, that's the biggie, Apple Podcasts. And that's the one. Speaking of that, you know, guys, and it's kind of become a thing of the past. I don't think anybody goes on and writes reviews anymore and rates these podcasts. When they first came out, that was kind of a fun thing to do, you know, and you get reviews and all, but we generally don't. The last review I got on this podcast that we did says the greatest podcast in existence. I thought, well, that's a good place to stop right there. But anyway, you can go on to Apple Podcast and you can write a review and you can give us a rating. Go click all the way over on the far right. Give us that 5-star and post a review. Let us know what you like or dislike about the podcast. And we will read those and take them to heart. I promise you we will.
Make sure you specify stars are mine and which stars are Steve's. So that way we don't get them mixed up. That'd be great.
Right. Say you like the old guy or the young guy. Or you don't like either of them.
Oh, boy.
Well, Mr. Groover, I think we've about shined this tree. I'm sure these people are ready to get on with it. They're probably listening at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They're ready to get home, feed the dogs, hopefully have a good dinner and a nap, and head for the woods. I would hope.
That sounds like a great afternoon, man.
Yeah. Well, it's been good catching up with you again, Corey. Oh, we have a big announcement to make. Corey has informed me, of course I knew this was coming, but I didn't know it was upon us so quickly, that he will not be in the chair for the next, few podcasts because of a new baby that's coming to the house.
Yes, sir.
Tell us a little bit about that, Corey.
Yeah, we got a bouncing baby girl that's getting ready to make her appearance here shortly. I know by the way that my wife looks at me when I'm snoring at night in bed, and we're pretty close.
Are you one of these guys that never hears the baby cry? Or do your feet hit the floor when you hear the baby cry?
No, it's kind of weird because my wife, she changes more diapers than what I do, or, you know, she's very attentive in that way. But it's funny because I'm the one that will hear the baby crying at night, and she's the one that will hear the dogs barking out back, you know, during the day. So, I guess we both have our talents and strong suits.
Well, you have a beautiful daughter now.
Yes.
How old is she?
Eliana Joyce. She is pert near 2 years old now. I can't believe that.
Almost two. Oof. Is she excited about the new baby coming?
You know, she really enjoys babies. We've been fortunate to have her around some of our friends, you know, fresh born babies and everything. But man, I'll tell you what, she's got the chickens out back scared. So hopefully she doesn't treat her sister like she treats the chickens out back.
Little sister's going to grow up tough.
Yeah, well, right? Eliana's pretty tough. She's a lot tougher than I am, I can tell you that much.
Oh, I remember when my brother, he's 8 years younger than me, and he was, you know, he was a tough little guy, and he pestered me a lot and stuff, and I used to push him around. You know, I was a big brother. But I remember a time when kind of got on little brother's case and little brother pushed back. And I figured out it's about time for me to leave him alone.
I never got to experience that. I was the youngest one in my family. Brother.
That explains a lot of things. Why you're so spoiled.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
Well, I did want to mention that I got a new supply of the Zep Lifetime Coon Squallers. They came just today, so I'm all primed and ready to start up the weekly spins. On Facebook, we will do the Wheel of Names. I will get a name out there. As you're hearing this, you will have already hopefully participated in the first one of the new set. This Zep Lifetime Coon Squaller, $30 value. It's a metal squaller with three reeds, got a nice paracord lanyard on it. Just a real nice coon squaller made by Big Mark Zep. Everybody knows Mark and his association for many years with Wick Outdoor Works, and then Tritronics Corporation, and now with Garmin. So first class in every way, and we'll be giving one of those along with a copy of the Gone to the Dogs, A Coon Hunter's Journey, the book that I wrote. That is a $25 value. And we'll also have some decals and stickers for your vehicle. So anyway, watch Facebook for the Wheel of Name Spin Question of the Week. You answer the question correctly, send it by private message to me, and we will put your name on the wheel for the spin each Friday at 5:30 p.m. Corey, that's all I've got for today. I wish you the very best going forward with your new one. I know that you're going to send me lots of pictures that I can post on the Gone to the Dogs podcast news page, and I'm sure you'll be posting a lot of them yourself. So we're going to look. Have you picked a name yet for the new
one? Yes, it's going to be Blair Michelle.
Oh, how pretty. Yeah. Very pretty. Well, we all will be praying for safe delivery of Miss Blair, Michelle Groover. And until next time, if you're looking for Corey, I'm afraid the Gone to the Dogs thing's going to be on hold. He's going to be gone to the nursery. Folks, Steve Fielder speaking for Corey Groover. We thank you for listening to us. Once again, and we'll be back next week right here on Gone to the Dogs. What say you, Corey?
I say take care, everybody. We'll see you when I get back.
Good night.